they don't have that, you know, obvious, wow, he or she is a great painter. You know what I mean? It's like they themselves know that that's not what they do. And I think I like that. I like the fact that they're the underdog, and I'm always usually the underdog anyway. So I think we have a good match.
You know, you give so many artists, budding artists, hope right now with those words.
Welcome to the Slowbrow Show.
Okay, hi, and welcome to my second interview. My guest today is the knowledgeable curator of Giant Robot Store and GR2 Gallery in Los Angeles, Eric Nakamura. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for joining me today. It's a great honor. I've heard so many good things about you and your gallery, so I'm excited.
Yeah, from where?
From all of the pop artists that I talked to. You know one of them, Linnea Strids. She was on earlier, but
oh, who's that?
Linnea Strid.
No. I'm kidding.
Shame on you. No. but you have a well-known gallery, at least for me. You know, I'm sitting here in Sweden, and when you Google pop art and galleries, your gallery shows up, and you represent so many interesting people that I love. So,
wow.
Yeah, for me, you're the place to be, and yeah, that's why I'm so excited to have you here.
Awesome, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you for existing. So, but for people who are not familiar with your gallery, what kind of art do you showcase?
So, I guess the hardest part is to categorize what your own gallery does, because I think I'm always thinking I don't want to have limits, right? That's sort of like maybe it's something typical a gallerist might say, is that having a limit is just limiting, right? Kind of bad. But at the same time, I think after... this is going to be year 15 now for the gallery space. And I think I know what I like, and I think I know what works. So I just know that usually the art I show has some kind of base in illustration, that it's not necessarily like abstract or collage, or I don't know, something, you know, like there's so many, I guess, art categories, but I think illustration usually is where it starts. And that's kind of the easy way to put it. It can't be too complicated. I mean, I am in a very, I would say, kind of a commercial area. So for me, I need to be able to have art that someone who has never seen art of any sort can walk in and kind of get it right away. And if I'm confusing people, I'm doing a bad job. You know, I don't want to confuse people. So, but you know, at the same time, I like so many different genres of art, but I just know that I think it starts in illustration. Actually, a little bit of craft sometimes, you know, matters to me, because that's usually these are like things that are maybe galleries don't want, is like a little bit of craftiness, a little bit of, you know, more illustration, even a sense of humor or comics works for me too. So I think when I mix it all together, that's the artist I like. So typically, let's just say you go to a good art school portfolio day when there's 25 artists, or let's just say, 25 artists. I could look through the whole art show, and many of the galleries will pick the one who can paint really well. Like they'll go, wow, you know, this person is making great big paintings of, oftentimes it's pretty females, you know, like good looking females is like are the subjects, and the art looks amazing. But for me, sometimes I'm picking the one that's not like that. I'm picking the one that's using craft, and maybe it's watercolor, and you know, they're depicting something completely different, more of an illustration-ish type of scene. Maybe sometimes I pick that person. I think, wow, this is my favorite person. Definitely not the same one that other galleries would pick. I'm usually picking somebody completely opposite. And I think, and I would say to myself, wow, what are they looking at? That person's amazing, but this person is the most amazing. It's super unique, you know? And I think I often find that person, of course, it's a harder road for them. They don't have that, you know, obvious, wow, he or she is a great painter. You know what I mean? It's like they themselves know that that's not what they do. And I think I like that. I like the fact that they're the underdog. And I'm always usually the underdog anyway. So I think we have a good match.
You know, you give so many artists, budding artists, hope right now with those words.
Really? I've actually told just one or two of the artists I met. I was like, you know, you are actually, to me, you are the best person here. And you would not think so. And everyone thinks the other, these other like four other people that paint amazing are the best. Sometimes I've told one or two artists where I'm like, you know, to me, you are the best, like by far. And I don't know. I don't know if that's great or not. I mean, it's good for me, you know, like I actually believe that, but yeah, I don't know if it, in the big scheme of things, in the big picture of art, you know, maybe they're not, I don't know, but I'm willing to tell them the truth.
Yeah. Well, I'm guessing here, but because you like illustration, I'm thinking you go into the story of the image and then you need more than just a pretty face.
Yeah, but I would hope that the other painters, they probably have a story behind their painting too. So I'm not going to disparage their work, but I'm usually thinking, you know.
No, of course. Yeah, that sounded maybe a bit mean what I just said, but you know, I'm just saying, good technical skills and a pretty model isn't enough, but human nature.
Oh yeah, well, it's enough for a lot of people, believe it or not. I think they're making some great sales that way, but there's usually got to, yeah, ultimately, if they want to be long-term, I think there needs to be a story or a viewpoint behind it, and that'll carry them to the next, I guess, next line of paintings that they do. I just don't think you can just get away with it for a long time, you know, just painting pretty pictures or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. We're actually answering one of my questions here, because I sort of pinned you as a person who, you know, go with this gut feeling when you pick out artists to represent. And you sort of describe that. But then I also had this thought that, you know, you need to be a businessman too, to, you know, do 15 years as a gallery curator. You know, you have both business side and gut feeling combined. Am I right?
I think the business side could be better. I often leave that one a little bit further away. I'd rather have a good gut feeling about what I do and art I enjoy and what I want to show. But I think the business side could be better, because I often make business decisions based on sometimes that gut feeling. But I also know that sometimes it makes poor business sense. And I know that going into it, I'm like thinking, okay, this is a tremendous risk. And you know, I'm thinking it might not sell well at all, and I'm not going to, it's going to be a very difficult month. And I do it anyway. I'm just like, oh, let's just go for it, you know? And it makes poor business sense to me, like going into it. But I'm willing to try it, and I want to see what happens. So I think in that way, you know.
So you wouldn't be someone that has like a broad appeal just to be able to, you know, eat for a month, like, or do you sort of do a bit of both, a bit of gambling and then a bit of safety?
Yeah, that's kind of what happens. When I, like, for example, the artists that do well and sell very well in my gallery, they oftentimes are the ones that help the other artist do well. You know what I mean? Or have a chance. Because if I don't have some of the artists that do really well showing with me, I can't take a chance on new folks that might do poorly. So in a way that I like to say, and I hope the artists understand that when they do something for me, that's, you know, like they're showing with me or doing something like a project of some sort, and we're making a little bit of money. I hope that artist understands that they're actually supporting another generation of artists too. Like it's not just me. It's also the quote, more established artists who are helping the smaller artists. So in a way, I think that's kind of the way that we all grow, is that we're all actually giving back just a little bit into the scene or the art world that way, that we're all sharing. But, you know.
Yeah. That was a really good point. Like, you just put words to something that I sort of didn't. I hadn't put words to it myself, but it makes total sense when you say it, when you put it like that. And it's a beautiful thing to do that. That's the sort of why I started this pod as well, just to share whatever little I know and, you know, wheel in people who know more and can spread more hope and, you know, light on this industry. So it's
a crazy industry, isn't it?
It is a bit crazy, but it's also very, it's really interesting and it's easy to get sucked in and it's really hard to leave behind. Like I told myself many times, why am I doing this again? But you just can't because it's so interesting as well. So it's a bit like a drug, I guess, addictive.
So sometimes thinking too much about it is, I mean, it's great to think about it, but sometimes people think too much about it and worry too much about the minutiae of the little details of what their art and how it reacts at a gallery versus, you know, the business end of it. Sometimes there's too much thought put into that. And I'm like thinking, God, that energy you put into that, put into making more art, you know, and keep working hard.
Oh, that's so good advice. Really good advice.
Sometimes the folks that worry the most about it are the ones that don't need to, and maybe vice versa. You know, the ones that maybe need to think about it more are the ones that don't. So it's kind of always the opposite to me.
Yeah, but that was really good advice, not to think so much about what people expect, but just keep it real, sort of, and work from there.
Yeah, I think it's just working hard, especially, quote, a younger artist or someone who's lesser known or newer in galleries. I think the best thing you can do is not worry about the minutiae of it, but just work really hard and develop and keep pushing your edges a little bit more and more. And I think that alone will help you more than thinking about little business decisions or versus like being paranoid about this or that or thinking too much about I guess you would say the business end of it or some of the things that we're podcasting about. Sometimes I'm like, you don't have to think about this too much, you know, like don't worry about these things. Just keep going, like keep pushing the work. And because that's the most important is to keep producing, you know, thinking about it will slow you down actually. And maybe we'll depress you.
Yeah, probably. But I'm thinking also that we're being sort of molded by today's social media. Like everybody get these pop-up notes from Facebook and Instagram saying you need to push more, you know, push more people into, you know, into your feed and everything. You're like a product. And I think that that kind of thinking is not very healthy for anyone. And I think we start, like, social media is priming young people to think of themselves as products and, you know, to go where you were talking about being, you know, believe in yourself and do what you want to do. Like, it's a far cry from what you then, the messages you receive when you log on to social media. So I hope it won't mess us up too much. I hope we will sort of, you know, get a protecting barrier around us so we don't have to struggle with that in the future.
You're so right. I think social media is definitely a driving factor into making maybe a young artist more paranoid. You know, I mean, I do like the fact that it can help your competitiveness. You see good art. Hopefully that makes you want to make more good art and not, it won't just depress you, but it makes you like work a little harder or get you inspired to do more. That's cool. But I think the part that I don't like about social media is the fact that I think it's creating a lot of jealousy, maybe. And a lot of times people are really good at social media. Like, they're good marketers and what they're putting out there might not be real. You know, like, it's not exactly true information. I can't tell you how many times I've seen other galleries put out some amazing images and say the greatest things. And then maybe 6 months or 3 months later or a year later, they closed down, you know, and I'm thinking, wow, they weren't doing well. But I was like thinking, gosh, I need to work harder because all these other galleries are doing so well and I feel so behind. And it's pushed me to work harder. But at the same time, I'm thinking, wow, it didn't work out for them. And what they were putting out there might not have been real. So I've kind of learn to not worry about that stuff and try to keep any kind of jealousy I have in check and use it to work harder and focus on myself. So when I feel that I'm looking at social media and I'm feeling a little jealous of something, like I see another gallery, I try to think, one, to be happy for them. I'm like, wow, you know, like, that's awesome. Good for you. Awesome. You know, and then I kind of think, okay, let's not worry about that. Let's go back to what I do, because that's the only thing I can work on. You know, I won't gain anything by feeling jealousy. So I'll actually go back and think, okay, well, what can I do a little bit better for myself and for the artists I work with, for my own space? And that's all I can focus on. And then, I move on.
And sometimes it's about timing. And timing sometimes has to do with luck. So I think you're very talented for staying in this industry for 15 years. And, you know, so just the fact that you're still around is a very good sign. And I think slowing down so you can work harder could be good. Like, I don't think you should try to do too much at the same time, because you'll end up with, you know, all of these half-finished things. So I think you're on to something really good.
Oh, I agree.
Well, you were talking about this gallery in your podcast you did with Daniel Rolnick, The Jew and the Lotus. I've been listening to it a lot and I love it. But then I Googled it and I noticed that did you borrow the title from the famous book written by Roger Kamenetz?
There's a book out there, and I think it was called The Jew in the Lotus. So I don't want the Jew to be in me if I'm the Lotus. So, it decided to be an and. I think that's a lot safer. We became like partners, not somebody in something. Because I don't want him in me. No, thank you.
Exactly. Don't become my growth, you know, don't grow from me. Well, it was about this historic dialogue between rabbis and the Dalai Lama. And when I read that, I was like, wow, I want to read that book. But did you read it? Was that how you...
Actually, I've never read it. It was a random, just a random kind of occurrence.
Yeah. Well, I need to read that book now anyway.
We heard of the book. But I don't know anything about the book, so yeah, that's where the title came from.
Yeah, cool. Well, it's a wonderful podcast. But you mentioned that you're not doing it anymore.
We haven't lately. Maybe we'll go back to it, but right now we haven't in 2018 done an episode. Yeah, because I think Daniel left social media for a little bit, and I was like thinking, oh, it's a good time to take a break because we've done a lot of episodes and. I don't know. I always think we suck. So
no, they're really good.
I'm always like, we're no good. We're no good at this. So I thought, oh, maybe it's a good time to regroup or do something different for a while.
Yeah. Well, you know, as long as you have this idea to maybe do a podcast again in some shape or form, I'm happy, because I thought it was really, really interesting. And, you know, I'll be going through all the episodes while I paint.
Wow. I forgot how many there are, but I think there's quite a lot. So good luck.
Thank you. I have many work hours, you know, so I have lots of good things to listen to now. So I was thinking, you arrived in LA when you were in your early 20s. Did you want to become a gallery curator at that time, or why did you have like a dream when you went there?
Oh, I was born
Oh,
here.
You were born there. Where did
yeah,
I
Yeah, I'm born in Los Angeles. Oh. So I'm actually born and raised here. So I'm one of the few who can say, hey, I'm actually born here. A lot of people are from somewhere else.
Yeah, so. Well, I read that somewhere. Somewhere wrong. Yeah, maybe okay. It was another guy known as Eric Nakamura.
Okay.
Well.
Oh, there are other Eric Nakamuras. The name isn't that uncommon.
Oh. But that's cool. So you were born there.
But I'm
but
born
did,
there.
Where, did you want to get into the art industry?
Oh, no. This is just a hobby. I think when I first started let's see, Giant Robot as a company, it was a magazine first. It started in 1994. But I think the art part happened in the magazine as well. We started seeing so much great art that was not being covered in press. So we started covering it. And then at the same time, we had a store, we opened a shop. And then soon I realized, oh, there's so many great artists who have no place to show. Like, no, there's no chance for them anywhere. So I opened a space so we can show art by a lot of great artists that I've known, or, you know, who are young but have no chance. So that's kind of why. And sure enough, it sort of worked out right away. But I would say that at the time in 2003, the art world or art scene, at least in the world that I'm in, was quite different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was very little outlets or places to show. So we were one of the few for a young artist that I guess is in somewhat in the same style. And I'm not sure if there's that many more places to show, but there are, you know, but there were, I think, almost none.
Mm. Well, and this was also before, you know, the social media really blew up. So you did all this and, you know, stayed afloat without the help of, you know, Instagram and everything that didn't exist. Maybe it wasn't as big, you know. I think it's a big difference going back 10 years from now. The world was...
Oh, it's 15 for the gallery.
Oh, God. Yeah, but time flies. And
yeah, I think there was no Facebook yet, and Instagram definitely wasn't there. So maybe Twitter was, but I'm not sure.
I had my first American client when I started up as an illustrator calling me because he found my work on DeviantArt. That's how I rolled back in 2007, I think. But yeah.
That's great. Yeah. The web definitely has connected artists from maybe artists and gallerists and clients from all over the world. I think especially through Instagram makes a huge difference. And I think that's something that artists have to do is manage their social media, whether they like it or not. I think it can help. It can't hurt them too much. I would think that it would only help them a little bit if you're consistent in posting. And I think the bigger artists I know, they treat all that free media stuff as a business or part of their business. And they're very good at it and very loyal to it. It matters. I hate to say they have to do it. You know, it's planned. It's very scheduled.
Yeah. But a lot of artists I talk to, they complain about having to put so much time and effort to social media just to sort of, yeah. But maybe artists did that throughout times, just in differently, you know?
Yeah, or mailing postcards. I know people used to do that. You know, mailing postcards, designing a postcard, getting it printed, putting stamps on it, finding who to mail it to, you know, one by one, you know, like, oh, art directors, and looking it up, finding out the right name, and then maybe follow up. There's so many things you had to do, or maybe you still have to do a little bit, but that's all that's all the stuff you do when you're not painting, I guess, or not drawing. But you have to do it, I think, as a part of the job. It's definitely a component of it. And a lot of people will say, I'm just the artist. I don't do that. But I think you have to do it to some extent. And if you don't, you might be the one that gets left a little bit behind. So I would suggest doing it or paying somebody to do it.
That was also good advice. Yeah, because I have people being like, I can't refuse, can I? And I think that sort of answers the questions. Sure, you can refuse, but you know, you probably should do a bit of work on social media.
Yeah, I think so. I think you should do it. You know, it sounds crappy. And I think, I hate to say, but being social matters, you know, like being able to like show up places personally and meeting people. I mean, that's still in that digital age. It's still important, you know, like that's something that's going to help you over time. It shouldn't hurt. So those are little things I would still tell people to do that, you know, you got to get out there personally. Like, you know what I mean? You can't just stay behind a computer and expect it all to work out. It may not, you know, I think your best chance is actually still getting out there, going face to face with people. And no matter how shy you are, and I think I'm a pretty good place for shy people. You know, like I work with a lot of artists who are shy and awkward, and I think I'm...
Shy, awkward artists, go to Eric Nakamura in LA. Now you'll have hordes of people lining up.
I think I was once shy and awkward, you know, like I understand that person really well. That person is me also.
Yeah, me too, actually. I'm okay behind a screen, but the few times I've been at gallery openings, I just feel so completely, you know, not very comfortable. But I think also that if you embrace just being there and being grateful for being able to be there, it's easier. So it's all in your head somehow as well.
Yeah, that's you're right. I agree, you know, but that's totally it. Is I meet the shy and awkward, and I think I know how to deal with a shy and awkward person pretty well. Like, I just know that I'm paying attention to the person who doesn't often get paid attention to. That's sort of like the underdog mentality, is that I'm looking out for the underdog, you know?
That's so nice to hear. Because the other people, they are already catered for, you know? So they're
helping themselves a lot when they're very social and, you know, all that stuff. But there's the person that's got the backpack on, that's kind of like got their head down, and they might be the most talented person in the room. You just don't know. You know, my job is to find that person.
Yeah. I think at some point, you know, I'm a little bit jealous of people who can just own any situation and be comfortable in any situation. They're out there, and I think it's they probably worked hard to get there as well. So, you know, I won't say that they're less good people, you know, but it's also nice that you don't have to, you know, be the best yet to sort of be acknowledged. Because I'm thinking art life, it should at least last for a long time. So if you want to do art between age 20 and 60 or 70 or 80, you have a lot of growth happening during that time. And I think with the social media and so many young people, you know, being able to live the artist life, when you're in your 40s or maybe 50s, maybe, you know, they're feeling a bit sad that they didn't make it yet. But I'm thinking, so long you don't give up, you still have a chance, and you don't have to be perfect. You just need to sort of push on forward, right? And go to Nakamura if you're shy.
But you should, I would think that by 40 or 50, wow, you if you've been working this whole time, I hope that your art is pretty refined and, you know, you're happy with it in some way. I hope so.
Yeah. Wouldn't it be cool if a shy 50-year-old artist came and showed you his or her work, and it was just amazing and mind-blowing, and you could just, you know, pick them up and, you know, show it to the world? Yeah, have you had an experience like that?
They're out there. I show one artist. Yeah, I show one artist who started with me, gosh, I'd like to say 5 years ago. And her name's Gaudelaine Rosamel, and I'm not going to tell you her age, but she's closer to my age than many of the artists I show. She might be over past my age, but started way late, and I think she's amazing. It's like sculptural, but I think the work's really fun and amazing, and I show her as much as I can. But that's an example of somebody who started later, and you know, and again, that's an underdog to me, that everyone's looking for the next young person. But I think art is definitely a long-term game. So I think it can, a great artist can be of any age. And I want to believe that.
Yeah. And some stories take maybe longer time to tell.
Oh, for sure. You know, people get better and better, I'd like to think, or it's simpler and simpler in a way. But yeah, I'd like to think that. And that's kind of, you know, I've got my eye out there too. I'm not looking for necessarily the quote hottest artist, you know, or the, you know, like in terms of like both appearance and age and technique and all that stuff. No, I'm not looking at that at all. So, you know, but I know that's important for some people.
But you have very good quality, like browsing through your gallery. I'm like, I love that. I love that. I love that. So you have very good eyes, you know?
I hope so. I hope so. I just, it's like most gallerists out there. I'm liking things that I would put on my wall, and that's kind of a part of what I show is just what I would put on my wall. You know, I like to think that that's what other gallerists do too, and not just necessarily to turn a buck, but I don't know. I guess we all have to do things to survive as well. You know, so if another gallery does some kind of thing that is super commercial, like at first I would make fun of it or be really like look down on it. I'd be like, oh, why are you doing this? You know, it's so obvious. You're just trying to make money. But over time, I learned that, you know, as a small business, you have to do things sometimes that maybe you don't like or maybe that would get criticized. But I don't fault it anymore. I used to really think, oh, that's so bad you're doing that. But, you know, if you're surviving, you're doing the right thing because ultimately you can help out an artist somewhere.
You know, just being able to stay put will help. So I think also that, you know, yeah, causing a few people to frown isn't that bad if you're doing it the right way.
Yeah, if you disappear, you know, you've really blown it, right? Because you're unable to help anybody anymore. So I think that's the most important thing is staying afloat.
Yeah, you need to be a little bit of a businessman. And that goes for artists as well. Like, you need to look after yourself, keep food on the table.
Yeah, and you know, and by doing that, you're actually looking out for the others too. So, yeah.
I have one more weird question for you. This is a have you heard of the universal basic income idea? Universal basic income? Oh. Did you hear about it?
What? Yeah. Oh, I have. Yeah. Don't they do? Didn't they try and experiment somewhere?
Well,
in...
there was a lot of.
Oh, I can't remember. Isn't the country next to yours? Didn't they?
I think they mentioned Finland would try, but I haven't heard anyone actually applying this system yet. But I have a question regarding that. You know what it is? Like everyone gets like
actually, no, I don't know. I know what it is. I don't know what the question is exactly.
It's coming. I was thinking if the whole world applied the idea of universal basic income, do you think the art world would look different?
Wow. That's a tough question.
Like, if everyone got salary for doing nothing, what would you do? Like if you didn't have to bother about paying your rent and getting your kids to the doctor sometimes, you know, would more people do art? Who would be an artist?
That's a good question. I would like to think so, but I think at the same time, some of the people that are doing art might not do art anymore. So, you know what I mean? I think then you'll be like, oh, so I don't have to do this and I can kind of skirt by with doing the minimum. You're always going to have some that are going to game a system and try to find a way to get by without doing more. And you're going to have some that just are driven to succeed in art. I think so. I'm not sure. Like, I'd hate to lose some of the artists who I think are really fun to look at or really good. But at the same time, some people just have to survive. I mean, life is actually bigger than art. You know what I mean? Although art is the greatest thing that we love it. And but sometimes living, having a family, and paying attention to your kids or your mother and father or your grandparents, that to me still supersedes art. Like, you know, if someone said a choice between your family or my art or my business or all that, oh, I'd walk away in a second from my stuff I do and hang out with my family. You know, that's still number one. So by far, it's not even close. So that's an easy decision. So I'm not sure if that applies to universal income since you're sort of getting everything. You're getting you still have your family and you'll have money without doing any work.
So what do you do with your free time? Like, I think, I don't know, because I was thinking, what would I do? And I would, you know, probably keep doing art, but also maybe do more social work, you know?
It's also possible that your art would get better. Like, you know, you might think less about making money, but thinking about just producing something that you really want to produce that, you know, you're not blocked by mentally, you know, somewhere even subconsciously thinking, oh, this isn't going to sell, so I shouldn't do it. Instead, you'll be making maybe you'll be more free and creating better art, whatever that means, you know, something better or something that is more true to you. Maybe that'll happen because of universal income. But yeah.
And I'm thinking a lot of uncle and aunts that are working now and had to work all their lives and never had this choice to make would probably be doing art as well. You know, people who never had the chance and never, you know, had someone tell them that you can actually study this and do that, you know, so.
Well, Wow. Yeah, that sounds interesting. So they haven't done that. So it was Finland, right? And I remember it was a country near you.
Yeah, and they haven't tried it yet. I know that the magazines wrote a lot about it and they were talking about trying it.
Yeah, I thought it was supposed to happen this year, but they're going to see what happens.
It would be all over the newspaper the day they do it, and I haven't read it yet, so I think maybe not doing it.
Wow. That's fascinating. How come you thought
of
that?
It's actually a question from my artist friend, Naomi. So I was telling her that I was going to talk to you, and she said, I've been thinking about this. Wouldn't it be nice to share this? So Naomi Nowak has a wonderful brain. So, yeah.
Naomi, you're weird. That's a great question. It's such an odd question, but a great one. Magical what if question. The what if is always a fun way to go.
And I mean, all struggling artists would, sigh from relief if they knew that this system would be applied.
Yeah, I've heard that a lot of people think it would work. I've heard people talking about it before, and they highly suggest it. That and then we would have maybe a more even playing field, and you'll always have some that'll try to game the system. Maybe, find people who recently died and get their money too. There's always somebody who's gonna be like, oh, they're collecting 10 times the amount because there's like, fraud. But you'll also probably help a lot of people and level out the playing field, and all the people that don't have that opportunity because they don't have enough money, basic money to start off. We'll be able to also participate. I like the idea to try it anyway to see if it works.
Yeah, let's try a small country, try it first, and we'll all watch and see what happens. And then we can, sort of expand. But I don't think I have any more questions. So I'm just going to ask, what's up next for you? What's coming up?
The next exhibition. I have a next, well, as exhibitions keep going, but I do have... the next one is by Rob Sato, who I've worked with for a little while, and he's going to have a show focused on a World War II Japanese-American military battalion called the 442. It was a comic he did online, but he wants to maybe recontextualize the artwork into an exhibition. So it's not really about the story of it, but it's more about the artwork of it. So I think that's kind of what we're showing. So it's really just... Ultimately, I'm saying all this fancy words just to mean that he's showing the art from a comic. But I think the idea is it's not really focusing on the story of the comic, but more so on just the artwork.
Yeah.
Yeah. It begins April 14th. And I know that we're going to have a day when the artist will speak about his story, not about the comic or the story comic, but he has his own family history regarding this battalion. I think his grandfather fought in that battalion in World War II. So he's going to speak about that. And I guess he hasn't been able to do that yet. And he wants to tell the story. And then we'll have another, other speakers too. So we're going to have also a public event maybe a week later. So we'll have an opening. Yeah. And this is something that's really different because it's historical. I don't think I've ever had work that's super historical, like literally about a historical period. I think it's the first time. And me being Japanese American, this story is probably underknown, although it's getting more and more known, but it's just underknown. And I think having art that depicts it is kind of, I don't know, it's really wild for me, like just strange and wild, but I'm also really proud.
Yeah. It's like a brave and necessary step for you.
Maybe. It's taken a whole career to get to a point where I can be at this point and be, I don't know. I feel like I'm giving back, by showing this. And but I just hope that instead of just an all, like an audience that I normally get, I'm hoping I get an audience that isn't really interested in art as much as the history. I'm hoping I get that audience too, who want to check it out.
It sounds so, so interesting. Wow.
And I'm hoping I get people who are 70 and 80 years old coming because they're the ones that might. Well, I think you have to be at this point about 80 years old or more to have a memory of being in that World War II era. So I'm hoping that I get an audience like that who come and hopefully enjoy the art and see things that they recognize. art is amazing.
Yeah, I'm wishing you the best of luck, and thank you so much for being in this podcast with me today. I'm really, really humbled and thankful, and it's been lovely talking to you.
Likewise. Thanks. I mean, it's the same for me.
Well, I'm wishing you a lovely day now, and yeah, see you around.
Thanks for having coffee with me. That's what it sounds like.
Yes. Afternoon coffee and morning coffee.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I love that. Bye.